November 14th, 2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today. Please visit RBN's website at republicbroadcasting.org. My website is spingola.com, where you will see the guest lineup for this program along with relevant links. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by going to spingola.chatango.com. Our guest yesterday was Peter Hendrickson. There is a file that someone sent to me, someone that we affectionately call Uncle Rick, and I have posted that file on, I believe I posted it on today's date. It's called Income Tax. I always like to be very objective. I try to bring truth tellers to the our radio program, and so I want to present more information so that people can draw their own conclusions about the information that was presented, and I thank you, Uncle Rick, for doing that. My guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com, and that four is the numeral four. Again, that is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He is the author of, he's the editor, translator, and producer of the film Hitler's War, What the Historians Neglect to Mention. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Einen wunderschönen guten Tag, Frau Spingola. A very good morning, Deanna.
Guten Tag
to you. Thank you so much for having me. And a very good morning to your listening audience. It's a pleasure to be with you again, and it was kind of short notice, but yeah, I appreciate the invitation for sure.
Great. Well, I appreciate you taking that short notice. Sometimes guests have other obligations that unexpectedly come up, and that was the case. So, but we're very thrilled to have you back on the program, and I'm sure that the information that you present today will be just as wonderful and delightful as you can possibly make it, as it was the last two times that you were on. We really enjoyed what you presented.
Oh, thanks very much. I've come up with a list of things I'd like to talk about today, but it was a tough choice on short notice here. There's just so many things that I've been posting on my blog here in the last week, and really torn between what I wanted to talk about just with a day or two to figure it out. But basically, I have, decided that, well, for one thing, we've just had up here what we call Remembrance Day in Canada down there. I guess it's a Veterans Day. And, November 11th is a special day all around the world where people gather together to memorialize the World War I, World War II veterans. And so I've always had a problem with that. Knowing what I know and coming from my German background and the history that I was told by my parents about the National Socialist era and World War II and what they grew up with. And so I've always had a different perspective about these things, and it's getting harder and harder over the years to just go along to get along with that sort of thing, and I just don't anymore. When people really know the true history, and I don't mean any disrespect to anyone who fought in that war, but there's a lot more to the story that needs to be told.
Exactly. All righty, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We will return after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com, and you were talking about the memorialization of World War I and II veterans, and I feel like you do, in as much as those veterans really didn't fight and die and get maimed and slaughtered for anybody's benefit except for the bankers and the people behind the bankers, the tribe, the Jewish tribe.
Yeah, I have to concur with you on that, and it's painful. I know to have to look at a lot of this information and to deal with some of these facts. And it's kind of like, when you're growing up and, you lose a tooth and you put it under your pillow and, you're told that the tooth fairy is going to come along and, give you a dime or a quarter, or, you had the Easter bunny, you had Santa Claus and all these things. And, we had to deal with those things eventually. Those bubbles got burst, didn't they? And we had to come to grips with the fact that there was no Santa Claus, was no Easter bunny, was no tooth fairy, a lot of these things. And so too it is with a lot of things in later on in life. There's just so many mythologies that have been built up for us and set into place. And we really do owe it to ourselves and to everybody that we love, and our children and so on, to do our own research and really know the truth about things. And by the way, am I coming through okay?
Yes.
Uh-huh. It was a little bit scratchy there for me earlier on my side. So, okay, just want to make sure it's coming through okay. But yeah, it's hard to, especially for those, I'm sure, who have loved ones who have, fought in these wars, and, they want to hold them in high honor and esteem. And so, I don't want to denigrate anybody's service. People who believed that they were doing the right thing. But it is, incumbent upon everybody to look at the facts. And my feeling is this, we don't honor anybody with silence. And that's what they want us to do. They want us to be silent.
Right.
We honor people with the truth. We should always be asking when somebody died, I don't care how they died, why, how, for what. And that is how we do honor and service to those people. And it's no different when we're talking about people who died in wars. Now, I want to just clarify a few things from the top. Now, I'm not using my last name on here. There's a reason for that. There are people who don't like this information being shared. And I myself, I don't have a lot of worries about myself in particular, but I do have, my family members to consider. And I am subject to laws both here in Canada and in the United, or in Germany. And they also do not like some of the information that I'm going to present here today being shared. Okay. So, and there are a couple of topics I'm going to stay away from. I do hopefully we will have a bit of time for a few calls later on in the show. But you're going to just have to respect the fact there are a few topics I will not talk about. I just want to get that out of the way. The other thing is that, and I am, very busy, not only with the blog, but I'm also on Facebook and getting, lots of friends on there all the time and friend invites and so on and so forth. And I guess a lot of people, make assumptions based on the material that I'm sharing and the things that I'm talking about. They make assumptions about me and what I am about, and that I, I'm automatically one of them, whatever they happen to be. So this is a little sort of a disclaimer right off the top that I wanted to share. And that is that, I'm primarily an activist, okay? I'm not anywhere near the historian that Deanna Spangola is, or Rodney Martin, or Veronica Clark, or any of these things. I have done a lot of research over the years, but I'm primarily an activist. And I've done activism on many different fronts over the years. But my focus now is the real history of World War I, and particularly World War II, about Hitler, National Socialism, and the suffering of my people, the Germans, both past and present, as well as how this history relates to the illegal wars being waged and war crimes being perpetrated today in the furtherance of the NWO agenda. We must learn the real and true history of these wars to stop the NWO agenda and all which that entails. We must not be guided by any misconceptions. Always do our own research. Always seek to increase our own understanding. After many years of research and activism on many fronts, I know that we must be on guard for wolves in sheep's clothing within the so-called truth movement, who will lead us down rabbit holes and offer a lot of bogus solutions. And in my experience, there are a great many of them. Now, I have no political agenda. I do not belong to any groups. I don't espouse any philosophy or creed or ideology. I follow no one. I do not intend to lead anyone, but only to share information and speak the truth as best I know it. I hope that my efforts will inspire others, especially the Germans, to do the same thing. Anyone who shares my concerns about what happened to my people is my friend. Any people suffering the same indignities and atrocities as those committed against my people are, they are my friend. Okay? And we have, we humans must not allow ourselves to be divided, herded, and culled by our common enemies. For this has always been their method of waging war against us and how they've always succeeded. And I do not agree with everyone who is a friend of mine, like on Facebook or whatever, who are on my Facebook friends list. I do hope that, you know, and they don't necessarily always agree with me, but I do hope that we will find common ground and expand on that. And rather than fighting and disparaging one another, you know, we need to work together and realize who our real enemy is, and realize that, you know, all of humanity is in danger when we do not know the truth and deal with the facts.
How true! I agree with everything that you said.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make that clear. You know, we've done two previous interviews, only an hour each time. This one's a bit longer, so I want to make that one abundantly clear. So some of the things that I have, I've looked at, you know, like I said, a number of different topics that we could discuss for this program, based on the various things I've posted on here in within the last week, in advance of Remembrance Day and the days following, and some of the things I've posted on recently, I've decided I'm going to just let your listeners know about them and let them look at them for themselves. But there's some really heavy duty things I've posted there.
One of my favorites, and the. Even the title is so poignant. The title is, "To You, They Were Criminals. To Us, They Were Grandfathers."
Absolutely. Yeah. That was inspired by just that image that I have at the top of the page on that blog piece. Someone shared that with me, and I thought, that's brilliant. I want to use that, because I had been looking on YouTube and looking for German World War II veterans who were able to speak out and share their experiences and what the reasons why they went to war and what they have to say about it now. Some of them are still alive. And I was able to find a number of videos where you can hear some of these gentlemen speaking for themselves. And they're in German with English subtitles. And I've added a bit of commentary on there from myself that you can look at. Rodney spoke of this one on Monday, and God bless him. Boy, he did a great job there on Monday as well. But he mentioned one about a German World War II veteran at Normandy. I'm not sure if I found that particular one that he mentioned, but there was one gentleman who went back there, and you can see him on the beach. Another guy, yeah. Who went back in 2008 and unfortunately passed away the next year. But it was his personal trip to go back.
Right. That was remarkable. Really remarkable.
Right. And it was really important for me to do that, to post that, because it is not allowed in Germany. These people are not to be celebrated in any way, shape, or form. And now you had a gentleman on your show a couple times last year who I really loved Gerhard Strauch.
Oh, I love that man. He is the dearest, dearest person.
Right.
I need to have him back. But
absolutely.
He's been ill, so.
Right.
But I think he's conquering it. He's doing his own thing. He's a great, great gentleman.
Yes, and he shared a lot of his experiences, too, from what he personally went through during the war. But he also shared with us about going to the back to the Russian front, or what was the Russian front, and honoring those Waffen-SS units, people who died there and who were never allowed back on German soil. The German government would not allow them to be buried on German soil again.
Right. The bones were still there.
Right. Yeah. So,
we know that Germany is an occupied country right now.
Absolutely.
So. All righty, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He is the editor, translator, and producer of the film Hitler's War, What the Historians Neglect to Mention. All right, so let's pick it up from where we left off.
Sure. So there were a couple of other posts that I put up just recently. Along the same lines, there was another one called Sie kämpften für Deutschland. They fought for Germany. And this has a video playlist on there with very rare, high-quality, full-color footage of the German Wehrmacht in action. And it goes on for quite some time. I believe it's actually 52 video clips on that. If you care to watch that, plus some commentary that I've added. And there was a gentleman you had on your program actually a few months ago. Let me see. His name was Alexander Mazentsev.
Oh, right. From Russia. Mm-hmm.
Right. And he did a wonderful article called Russian World War II Vets Say Germans Were the Best Soldiers in the World. So I have reposted that in its entirety with some great quotes from what these World War II Russian veterans had to say about their German counterparts. And who started World War II? Now, this features a video by Viktor Suvorov, who is the author of
Icebreaker.
Icebreaker, exactly. And actually, Icebreaker, I found it's hard to find now, but I managed to find a PDF copy of it that you can download. So it's got the video of his presentation, which he gave to the U.S. Naval Academy, where he was presenting the evidence that Russia, the Soviet Union, I should say, was indeed preparing to attack Germany from behind and to roll across Europe. And so this is not a conspiracy theory. It wasn't some guy at a conspiracy, conference someplace. He was talking to the U.S. Naval Academy. And obviously they take his information seriously.
Right, but not so serious enough to make it well known.
Correct.
He wrote several other books in addition to Icebreaker. I have Icebreaker, and then I also have his other one, and most of them are in Russian, so there's only two of them that aren't.
Right, and he did put out some stuff that I would not agree with as well.
Oh, but, exactly. I mean, he is, after all, Russian, and they were enemies during World War II, so.
Right. Okay, so, and finally, there's a few others, but there's one other one that's the very top one that I put up. And it was really hard to go through that. I called it a memorial for the millions of German women and girls who were raped and pillaged by the World War II Allied liberators.
Yes.
And
that
this
is a very difficult subject.
Yeah, it is. And somebody shared this this article with me, and I read through that, and it's really, really hard to read. But in addition to just posting that article, I went online and I did a lot of researching. I've seen some of these videos before of these women who in their latter years were interviewed on television to tell their story. So I've interwoven some pictures as well as three videos there that where you can listen to these victims tell their story. And they're speaking German, but there's English subtitles. Okay. And I would really, as you know, encourage people to listen to that. So that's basically my Remembrance Day and make it a Remembrance Week to go through that and hear the other story of what Germany suffered and what the Germans went through.
Right.
In addition to, and if you haven't seen my video again, yeah, it's Hitler's war, what the historians neglect, and there's a lot of great information in there that a lot of people just unfortunately have not been told. So,
I fear that probably they wouldn't believe it initially, but if you really start doing a bit of research, the information is readily available, and people who refute the information or present other information are doing it either as disinformation agents or just are plain stupid, or I should say ignorant. And right. I sent you an email that somebody sent me early this morning about one person that continues to produce these awful articles that demonstrate so well her blatant ignorance. It's unbelievable. But there are people who actually believe this stuff
because they want to believe it. You know, it goes on all the time. I know I didn't really have a chance to go through all that, but I know what you're talking about. And there's so much out there, and they keep churning it out, churning it out, churning it out, and they're never challenged, and they don't reckon with anybody challenging them either, you know.
Right.
And and I come across this on Facebook quite a bit too, where people will post up, and I'll have to go, no, wait a minute, that's not true, that's not what Hitler said, that's not what he did, you know.
Right. All righty, we're going to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com, and that's justice with the numeral 4, justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He's got a lot of articles up there on the right-hand side of the page. I just cannot believe how much you have worked on this site just since you got it put up. And how long has it been? Probably, 3 weeks?
It's been actually, it was like October, it's been about 5 weeks now, 6 weeks. Yeah.
I mean, you've done some remarkable work.
I've done 42 posts now, and they're all quite lengthy as well. Also, I've recently, been adding more and more links that people can go to find really good information. I know everybody's on I should add this too. I know everybody's on, a lot of people are on a tight budget and so on. So there's a lot of places you can go to get free information without having to purchase books. So I've got a lot of good resources there where you can read free ebooks and so on online with a lot of really good information. However, that said, I have also partnered with Amazon and opened my own book and DVD store, and from which the sales of which I would get a small percentage. But there's a link at the top of the page that's books and DVDs, and I have over 100 titles now to choose from on very much related information and books about related topics. Okay, and that would including Deanna's books right up there at the top, and Veronica Clark and some of the others that you've had on. So, and also if you are able to and feel so inclined and appreciate what I'm doing, there is a donation button there too. Okay, just putting that out there, and I would really be grateful for that. Okay, so moving on. Let's see. I I did actually, yeah, back when, before we did the first show, I put together very quickly, I just sat down and just started typing off the top of my head my personal background and my family history. And I've made that into an ebook. It's now 30 pages long, including some pictures. And that's something that I would, offer in return for anybody who does make a donation, to me through my site. To support the work that I'm doing, I would be happy to send you this 30-page ebook. Okay, and I'm just going to share just a little bit from that right at the top here. Okay, and I am, as I say, 52 years old. I'm born, I'm a Canadian by birth, born here, but my parents are both German, and my entire history, family background is in Germany. And my great grandfather on my father's side was a shipbuilder. And he ran the shipyards for Kaiser Wilhelm II. And now I'm a rebel by heart, and it's in my blood, and I come by it honestly. My great grandfather, he had some disagreements with Kaiser Wilhelm, and he told him to shove it, and he quit and moved on. He had some problems with something that kind of the Kaiser was doing. My grandfather. On my father's side, believe it or not, he was actually a social democrat, and he was against Hitler, and he ran afoul of the NSDAP a few times, and he got visits from those people that Rodney was talking about occasionally, but he was never arrested. the Gestapo.
Did they bust down his door in the middle of the night and drag him from his bed?
No, they did not. And one thing that my father told me, he said when they did come, he made sure, he says, okay, so you're coming to pick me up, and you're, the whole neighborhood is now seeing that there's somebody here to see me, and you're taking me away. You're going to bring me back. Is that correct? And they said yes, and they did. Okay, so they made, they didn't make him, kick him out and make him find the only way home. They drove him back home too, for everyone to see that they brought him back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and my father, when he came to this country, he did his level best to integrate and to learn the language as best he could, and actually he exceeded most people by far. He became actually an author, wrote many articles. His favorite pastime was the great outdoors, hunting and fishing and so on. He wrote many articles about that and several books. But he was also an activist in his own right. He was an environmentalist. He was very, very active at City Hall and civic politics and so on. And he was just not a guy who would just let the ruling people get away with stuff. And he would challenge them all the time. And so that has also been my history as well, because one thing that my parents did when I was a child, and all of my siblings, I'm the youngest of four, they told us everything that they could remember from the time when they grew up. Now, they grew up in Germany under Adolf Hitler. They, until the end of World War II, they had never known any other government other than the National Socialist government of Adolf Hitler. Okay? So, when we were growing up, we didn't have the television going, all the time, and we didn't have computers, and we didn't have all these distractions anymore, and they made a point of, everybody sits at the table and eats, and we're going to hear what they have to say, and they shared a lot of stuff with us about what life was like back then as they grew up, the good times, and they had no problems whatsoever. In those times, before the war, society was great. There was no crime. You had no worries. Their needs were taken care of. Everybody had their parents and grandparents had work and so on. And they look back on those days with great fondness. However,
and the crime, that there was no crime in Germany because, well, if you have what you need and there's no class warfare and why would anybody commit any crimes? I mean, it just simply wasn't in their nature.
Right. Absolutely. Now, with my parents, they come from the Hanover area. You know, originally, my family comes from Westphalia, and towards the Dutch border, an area called Paderborn, Detmold, Augustdorf. There's a few different towns there that were where my family roots come from. And but they grew up in my dad is from a town called Zeende, and my mom from a little town called Leerte, just outside of Hanover. And these are two small towns, about only a couple kilometers apart. Dad was born in 29, mom in 31. And during the war, their little towns were repeatedly heavily bombed. And in my mother's town, I guess the main thing there was that there was a huge railroad yard there, one of the biggest railroad yards in northern Germany. So they got it pretty bad for that. There was also a sugar factory there. There's sugar beets are growing around that area, and they make sugar there. And they got hit very badly. Zeende, that was it's a salt mine is the main industry there, or at least it was back then. And my dad also worked there for a time too. But there was also the fact that they were, in close proximity to Hanover, and Hanover got it very badly. So I'm going to want to get into that a bit today. And
I don't think people realize all the bombing that took place in Germany.
No.
And it's just like a lot of people don't recognize that all of the warfare during the Civil War took place in the South. And, I mean, it's because of the way that the war was executed by other people.
Right. No, you cannot imagine what was done to the Germans. You cannot possibly imagine it. I mean, even as for us growing up as kids, and even now, without being there, it's hard to know. And yet, I've talked to other Germans of that age group, survivors, who tell me the same thing, the same horror stories. And it's very heart-wrenching, heartbreaking to know that anybody would have to suffer that. And that what's worse, though, is to know that there are people out there who would do that to another human being, to another group of human beings,
Yes.
So before I get into that, however, I want to share a couple of quotes here. Let me just put on my reading glasses. This is from the proclamation that Hitler gave to the people on February 1st, 1933. This is, as regards to its foreign policy, the national government considers its highest missions to be securing of the right to live and the restoration of freedom to our nation. Its determination to bring to an end the chaotic state of affairs in Germany will assist in restoring to the community of nations of state of equal value, and above all, a state which must have equal rights. It is impressed with the importance of its duty to use this nation of equal rights as an instrument for the securing and maintenance of that peace which the world requires today more than ever before. May the goodwill of all others assist in the fulfillment of this, our earnest wish, for the welfare of Europe and the whole world. So to those who think that Adolf Hitler had a plan to take over Europe and control, rule the world, sorry, it was never his plan, ever. And as again, that's also in my documentary that I narrated there. Next quote, Hitler on German-British relations. I feel it to be a great misfortune that on August 4th, 1914, these two great Germanic nations, Germany and Britain, which, through all the fluctuations of German history, have lived in peace for hundreds of years, were plunged into war. I would be very happy if this unnatural state of things came to an abrupt end and our two kindred peoples found their way back to the old relations of friendship. Adolf Hitler speaking to a British journalist, October 18th, 1933. So again, compare and contrast that to what you have been told in school, what you've been constantly told in the media, okay, about how Hitler was a warmonger. Now, hear this. This, and I alluded to this in one of our previous interviews. I didn't have the quote in front of me, but this is Winston Churchill. And this is from a book that he wrote in 1932, reflecting back on the World War of World War I, 1914 to 1918. He wrote in a book, the title of the book was Thoughts and Adventures. And he stated, everything that happened in the 4 years of World War I was only a prelude to what the fifth year would have brought. The War of 1919, we never fought. But the ideas live on. Death stands at the ready. It only waits the word. Next time, perhaps, it might be a matter of killing women and children or an entire population.
Wow.
Winston Churchill.
And of course, that was their goal in the First World War, was to decimate the entire population and destroy Germans and Germany from off the face of the map, as, you know, which brings up, you know, what the Israeli state is claiming that people are trying to do to them. They've actually projected their intentions on Germany, and one has to ask, what was it about Germans and what was it about Germany that brought such hatefulness?
Absolutely. You know, the Germans knew what tyranny was, and it was foreign-dominated tyranny. They wanted their freedom back. They weren't to have an evil dictator over ruling them to rule over every minute detail of their lives. No. You know, Hitler was democratically elected, and it was a government of the people, by the people, for the people, in every sense of what Americans dream about. You know, and he was their liberator. Okay. And people really have to grasp that, and that the people did have freedoms, they did have rights, they also had, you know, a contract with one another, and the people were the country was the people, and they wanted to rule their own country by their own destiny, not by any kind of world dictates, which had been the case after World War One. Okay, now and you alluded to this earlier, I've done some research on this myself. Rodney spoke about it the other day. The BRD, the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, Federal Republic of Germany, is a hoax. It's a fraud. It has no constitution, and the people really don't have any rights. And I was watching a video clip actually of one of the people who in 1948, I forget the gentleman's name, a German who was speaking, as they were putting together the Grundgesetz, the basic law, and saying, who said, we are not creating a nation here, you know. So there's actually a website that people can go to if they want to get more information on that. It's in German, but you can also use a web translator for that. But it's called, let me think now, the BRD Schwindel, that's BRD, dash Schwindel, and that's the German, would be the German spelling with S-C-H-W-I-N-D-E-L. Okay, and then if you go to, I usually use Bing Translator. You can just copy the URL. It was .org, I believe. Yeah, BRD-Schwindel.org. And so there's a lot of really good information on that, and you can translate it into English and kind of get a feel of what I'm talking about there. So we're, we're almost, okay, let's get down to business here before we run out of time here. All right.
It's
so,
easy to do.
Yeah, there's just so many places you can go, and with this, it's just ridiculous. But let me finish up with this one more quote here, and this is what I quoted to you before was in 1933.
Okay, Wayne,
just
we'll
yes,
we'll have to do it on the other
sure.
side of the break. So we'll be right back. Welcome back. And our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Okay, you were going to tell us a quote from some other individual.
Okay. All right. So this is back to Adolf Hitler, and this should work out fine for this last short segment here. This is from his the private and political testament of Adolf Hitler, April 29th, 1945, just before he took his life. And this is what he had to say. It is untrue that I or anyone else in Germany wanted the war in 1939. It was desired and instigated exclusively by those international statesmen who were either of Jewish descent or worked for Jewish interests. I have made too many offers for the control and limitation of armaments, which posterity will not for all time be able to disregard, for the responsibility for the outbreak of this war to be laid upon me. I have further never wished that after the first fatal war, a second war against England, or even against America, should break out. Centuries will pass away, but out of the ruins of our towns and the monuments and the hatred against the, but out of the ruins of our towns and monuments, the hatred against those finally responsible, whom we have to thank for everything, international Jewry and its helpers, will grow. 3 days before the outbreak of the German-Polish War, I again proposed to the British ambassador in Berlin a solution to the German-Polish problem, similar to that in the case of the Tsar district under international control. This offer also cannot be denied. It was only rejected because the leading circles in English politics wanted this war, partly on account of the business hoped for, and partly under influence of propaganda organized by international Jewry. I have also made it quite plain that if the nations of Europe are again to be regarded as mere shares to be bought and sold by these international conspirators in money and finance, then that race, Jewry, which is the real criminal of this murderous struggle, will be saddled with the responsibility. I further left no one in doubt that this time not only would millions of children of Europe's Aryan peoples die of hunger, not only would millions of grown men suffer death, not only hundreds of thousands of women and children be burnt and bombed to death in the towns, without the real criminal having to atone for his guilt, even by more humane means. Adolf Hitler, and that's just an excerpt from that document.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, in June 1934, Emil Ludwig Cohn, C-O-H-N, said, "Hitler will have no war, does not want war, but we will force it on him. Not this year, but soon," unquote. That was said in June 1934.
Yes, absolutely correct. You know, and this, again, this goes back to the film that you can watch for free online, and this is all documented in the book The War That Had Many Fathers. But I've also got links on my website. If you go down to the essential reading section and related sites and so on, you'll find a wealth of information that will document all of this stuff, that Hitler wanted peace.
Right. All righty. We're going to our 60-second top of the hour break. We will be right back with our guest today, Wayne from Canada, after station ID. Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He is the editor, translator, and producer of the film Hitler's War, What the Historians Neglect to mention. Please visit his website. It's a wealth of information, justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Okay, we were going to talk, you were going to talk about the bombing operations.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and this is a short segment again, so I don't know how far we're going to get with this, but being in the second hour already, we're later than I thought we would be at this point. So, I would say let's hold off on calls for the time being. Hopefully we can get some maybe in the latter half hour. But I do have a lot of information here. I do want to share this so people really can maybe grasp this. And it's important to preface this by saying, you know, people have to realize this was not just a war to stop Adolf Hitler. Even if everything you believe about him were true, this was not about stopping Adolf Hitler. Okay, he offered to resign if that would be, you know, would end the war. If the Britons would agree to peace terms, you know, all of these things, they would have none of it. Okay, and what was done to Germany in compared to, you know, the bombing in England, you know, there is just no comparison. The amount, you know, what happened to England was nothing, absolutely nothing compared to what the Allies did to Germany. Hitler and his government did not even, you know, have any plans. He did not have long-range bombers and all of these things that the Brits had, which they were, you know, they had well in advance of World War II. You know, they foresaw this coming. They were planning for it and preparing for it. Hitler was not. You know, people have to really get that. And with regard to the destruction that was rained down on Germany, you must understand, this was the direct targeting of the civilian population. This was not a case of friendly fire, collateral damage. We were going after, oh, just the factories. You know, oh, we just had to get rid of that, you know, those trail lines. Sorry, we killed a few people along the way. No. This was a direct assault on the German people that in itself was a war crime, even then. Okay, that was not permitted. It had never been done before in history. This is not how war is waged. Hitler, in contrast to his counterparts, was a gentleman and had honor, and did not fight war in this way. I couldn't even imagine anybody fighting a war in the way that the British and the Allies did against Germany. Okay, so people have to really, really grasp that point. There is an article here I could read, but I think it's going to be a bit too long here, so I'm going to skip over that one. When we come back, and then we're going to be up against the break here pretty soon. I'm going to discuss what happened in, and I've chosen these three cities for a reason. There's, you know, a thousand different cities I could have chose from to talk about, but I lived in Hanover for 10 years. That's where my family comes from. And there's the city of Hanover, the city of Hameln, or Hamelin, and you would know it from the story of the Pied Piper, and another town called Hildesheim, very close together in north central Germany. And so I'm going to be wanting to share what happened to those three towns, just so you get an idea of what really happened. Okay.
All right. We are going to a break, and we will be right back, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Deanna, our guest today is Wayne from Canada. Somebody said something in the chat room. He said, I'm so sorry. The Allied bombers followed orders. Sorry, Germany. Sorry, Dresden. I feel so heartbroken the more and more I learn. There was, and then this is my sentiments. There was a time that I actually believed the things I heard about the Jews. And I, you know, I was very sorrowful, felt very bad for them. And now I feel heartbroken over what the Jews are doing to everybody on the planet.
Right. And we kind of just alluded to this in the previous show, and I know you've covered it in more in depth on previous shows, but people do need to research the Morgenthau Plan, the Hooten Plan, and the Kaufman Plan, and understand that if there was ever any plan, any policy of extermination in World War II, then that plan was against my people, the Germans. Okay? And this was not only carried out by air, not only by ground troops, and it does not only take place during the war, it happened after the war. It continued after, long after the war, and it continues today. Germany, as I mentioned, is not a sovereign nation. The people of Germany do not run their own country. And they're still, you know, very much being culturally genocided. Okay, so people have to understand that. All right, so I want to get down to the hard stuff here, and this is hard stuff for me, and I will do my best to get through this, but people need to understand. The city of Hanover is in north central Germany. I spent 10 years there. City today of about 500,000 people. At the beginning of the war, or from the time of the beginning of World War II, there were 428 raids on Old Hanover. It did have, you know, some industry there, an industrial area, a town that size, so it's not not uncommon. In October of 1943, the British dropped 3,000 high explosive bombs, 28,000 phosphorus bombs, and 230,000 staff incendiary bombs, destroying 4,000 houses and killing 1,245 humans in one night. Witnesses report later that when the scorching fire wind blew through, people frantically fled on pavement, which was actually on fire. Tough used bombs from three of the attacking airplanes still released their deadly charges for up to 144 hours after the attack. 10 days later, another 23,051 tons of bombs fell on Hanover and left 6.3 million cubic meters of rubble. The Ebsdorfer map of the world was the largest and most rich, contents-rich map of the Middle Ages, from the Middle Ages times, and it was created between 1230 and 1250, and was also the oldest map of Germany. It was destroyed along with the Federal State Library in Hanover. And I'm just going to share something again here from perspective of my family. And my mother witnessed this, okay? Of people being burned alive in the streets on the melting asphalt and coming out of the bomb shelters in the morning and seeing just burning stumps of what were once people who got stuck in the burning asphalt and were burned to death alive. Okay. This is the kind of things that your government, American, British, French, Russian, did to my people. All right. Now, Hameln. This is the city of Hameln, as it's called in English. Several small airstrikes were directed at Hameln in 1940, resulted in only minor property damage. The first concentrated attack was on in June 1941, when a British bomber night attack hit residential houses and killed 24 people. In July of 1944, the RAF attacked again, hitting another few houses, killing 20 or more civilians. In March and April of 1945, there were constant increasing threats. And I should say that the town of Hameln is not industrial. It's just a beautiful, beautiful little town, okay? On Wednesday, March 14th, 1945, the sky was beautifully blue at lunchtime. Many of the people coming and going to work or shopping were at the railway station in hopes of catching the midday trains. They did not know the trains had stopped running in the area because of bomber activity. When the enemy bombers were first spotted over the horizon, they flew in the direction of Hanover, and the people breathed a sigh of relief. But 12 British bombers suddenly reappeared from the east, gunning for the crowded train station. People had no time to react. Immediately, bombs rained down their death on the station grounds, dropping 93 spring-loaded bombs and 1,200 incendiaries. This was a direct assault on civilian population. Some 200 deaths were reported at the train station and 60 from the surrounding residential area. One entire family, a mother with her 6 children, was killed, and 12 other families lost 2 or more families in the attack. There was no colorful stranger to lead them out of town to safety. The Pied Piper type thing, right? 700 people were left homeless. The victims were laid in long rows of the dead on the pavement opposite the local hotel. For 3 years, suitcases, bags, and personal belongings of the victims were unclaimed, and desperate relatives searched them for clues as to the fates of their loved ones. Just after the war, Hamelin Prison was used by the British occupational forces for the detention of German prisoners, and more than 200 of whom, including women, were hanged after quick mock trials. The famed British hangman Albert Pierrepoint was recruited for this messy job, and the old prison today has become a fancy hotel. Yeah. I'm just giving you 3 examples. I'm telling you this was common all across Germany. Everybody, a lot of people know already about Dresden, and that was just horrendous. But if you have a chance, go back and listen to what Gerhard Stroke shared last year about what happened to the city of Cologne. It is just unbelievable.
Right, and he was a child, and he witnessed the black charred bodies in the river.
And they couldn't even, jumping in the river with this stuff on them would not put out the fire.
Right.
So next is the city of Hildesheim, which is about 20 kilometers probably south of Hanover. A lovely town I visited a number of times, that has been rebuilt, but it had no real there's no real reason for them to have done this. Before March of 1945, Hildesheim had about 68,000 inhabitants. The town contained established civilian hospitals, and the town center had no military installations or anything else of military importance. However, industries outside of the small city did, and many of the townsfolk had worked in these factories. There were factories that produced parts for fuses, ignitions, and gearboxes for tanks, as well as other important war equipment. One that that built parts for torpedoes, for instance. And one that was rumored later to have been used for the V-2 rocket. Other plants produced machinery, engine parts, airplane parts, and various weapons. There was also a rubber factory making gas masks, life jackets, rubber floats, rubber boats for the Army and Navy, etc., rubber parts for torpedoes, etc. At this point in the war, however, many industries were not functioning. There had been 7 or 8 minor bomb strikes beginning of July of 1944, hitting one of which hit a factory and a railroad installation, and St. Michael's Church and a few buildings in town. Nothing was there was no clue what the devastation that was going to come on the 22nd of March, 1945, which utterly destroyed the town.
And the criteria wasn't even what manufacturing. The criteria for Allied bombing was if it was a town that had over 50,000 people, because then they could kill the most people. And one interesting factor, I know we haven't talked about Berlin, but Berlin was... the Allies dropped more bombs on Berlin than on the entire country, than the Germans dropped on the entire country of England. And it was,
exactly.
They left this, it was just a burnt out, flame seared, it was horrific. But the Jewish hospital in the middle of Berlin remained safe during the entire war, and the residents, the patients there, had plenty to eat.
Absolutely, Deanna. And, you know, and the, one of the safest places you could have hoped to have been in Germany in World War II was in a concentration camp.
Exactly. All righty. We do have a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Sorry, I just get a little emotional.
Yeah, I do as well. I had to go grab a Kleenex here as well. It is not easy for me to talk about these things. I try and contain it as best I can, but it does hurt. And people, just like I say, you can't imagine these horrors until you've been through it, or you know somebody who has lived through it, who's been very close to you, you know. And for my mother, who is 81 years old as of last week, this comes back to her. You know, she can't maybe remember what she did yesterday or the day before sometimes, or even that morning. But this comes back to her in a heartbeat. What she experienced back then, she could never forget, ever, ever, ever. All right, I want to continue on about Hildesheim. Again, a pretty insignificant little town. In Bomber Command diaries, it's noted that marking the city center by pathfinders was very accurate. First, the city area was framed by red and green lights on the ground. The target area was first bombed by a massive shock bomb that destroyed the roofs and windows of the buildings. Bombs from the first wave fell concentrated in the city center. Corner houses were the most beneficial hits, because the rubble quickly choked the roads, preventing access by emergency vehicles as well as the escape path for citizens. The incendiaries followed, and in minutes turned medieval towns into towering infernos. By this point in the war, this procedure was well rehearsed, following the guide for efficiently burning medieval city centers. They flew very low over Hildesheim, bombing the medieval city center until everything caught fire. The huge fires and heavy smoke then predictably prevented people from escaping. 438.8 tons of mines and high explosive bombs, plus 624 tons of incendiary bombs, were dropped. And the high explosive bombs, as predictable, tore open the houses so that the deadly 300,000 incendiary bombs could kindle a fiery tower. The death toll was not as great as in many other bomb cities, but at least 1,645 civilians were killed, among them 204 women, 181 children, 68 of which were under the age of 6, 79 under the age of 14, and 34 of unknown age. 277 victims' ages could not be ascertained. Many of the other victims were elderly. 50 orphans were created. The sad irony is that while the obliterated town center held no military installations, Hildesheim's several vital factories in prime war industries, and also the major plants of importance and subsidiary factories on the outskirts of the town were virtually untouched by the bombing. Even in the large central goods station, you know, the freight station, with connections to all of the German Reich, was pretty much untouched by that bombing. There was the VDM works was the only clearly established factory which was precisely bombed, but it was previously bombed, had previously been bombed on the 14th of March 1945 by 60 U.S. bombers, and it was still not completely destroyed during this attack. Only one factory was actually destroyed then. Hildesheim, as I said, it's about 20 miles southeast of Hanover, and is a railway junction of some importance. The town center is largely built of half-timbered houses, you know, very romantic old German-style houses, and it's preserved its medieval character, you know, through centuries. There are various industries there, mostly in the hands of, you know, small businesses. In addition to the works mentioned in the town, you know, I mentioned previously some of the factories and so on. There was, you know, agricultural machinery and stuff like that being built there. There's also a sugar refinery. Lancasters and Mosquitoes attacked that town. The master bomber assessed the markers as being 200 yards off the aiming point, and therefore a good concentration of accurately placed markers was maintained. Bombs were seen to fall in the marshaling yards to the northwest of the aiming point, and the center of the built-up area, the downtown area, was soon a mass of smoke. Smoke rising to 15,000 feet could be seen for approximately 200 miles on the return journey by those planes. The intention was to destroy the built-up area and associated industries and railway facilities. Almost the entire town was devastated. Only the extreme suburban areas had escaped destruction.
All right. We're going to break. We'll be right back. All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. We do have a caller, Werner from Canada.
Oh, Werner, I would love to hear from Werner.
Good afternoon, Dan, and good afternoon, Wayne. I didn't know that, Wayne, that you came there from Lower Saxonia or Nordrhein-Westfalen. I come from Nordheim.
And, oh, yes.
I remember my parents, as I say, I was born in 1942, and I definitely have only vague memory about some of the things, but I remember my parents were saying that during the night when they started the bombing of Hildesheim, they said they would set the Christmas trees, they would light up the sky, and when that was going on, my parents, they had homesteaded in 1934 outside the town, then the people, they headed out of the houses, and we headed way out in the field, away from the building. And we were staying overnight in a culvert, in a big stone culvert out in the field. But this this was always preceding the bombing, and this is what I understood. Hildesheim was very severely bombed, and just only about three-quarters of a mile further down in the valley below our place, there was a main railroad yard, and they bombed the hell right out of it, too. But, yes. Jan, I want to say, last week you had Joe Cortina there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned about the bombing of Dresden, and he wanted to say that it were only British bomber squadrons that were doing the bombing of Dresden. And I did in the meantime some research. The American Air Force was involved to a great extent in this act of war crime that was committed in Dresden. And I
yes.
think.
Yeah.
From listening and watching and doing research, I think anything that comes from the military, it has to be taken with a grain of sand, you know. when your guest mentioned there about that they were on the good side in over the last few decades there in Central and South America, you know, the Green Berets and so. I think we have to take everything with a grain of sand, but it comes from the military, because too many of them, they want to appear as a great great hero, you know. Mm-hmm. We have seen, especially over the last few years, you know, what is being left behind in the aftermath of their great heroism, you know.
Indeed.
But as I say, I got quite a wake-up call over the last few, at least the last year and a half. And just before I called you up, a fellow phoned me back, and he just had swallowed too much of the, historical North American Kool-Aid. And I just gave up on him, you know.
Yeah.
There is a lot
of
work to be done.
I want to say to you,
the history has to be built on fact and not on fiction.
Yes.
And what I've seen here in North America and in Germany, too, too many people, they rely on the mainstream media, and what we are getting from mainstream media is mostly fiction.
Indeed. Okay, yes. Wayne.
Yeah, Werner, I just wanted to say before we let you go, I do have a few things I want to add to this.
Hello?
I just wanted to say, you know, Werner, I've heard your calls many times
over
the past couple of years. Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? Werner, can you hear me? I just wanted to say I've enjoyed your call and your contributions to the show many times over the years, over the last couple of years, and I really appreciate what you have to say. Now, it sounds like we've lost...
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened here. Okay. All right, Werner, thank you so much for calling in.
Jan, it's nothing unusual. Anything what the powers at hand, what they don't want to hear, then there are technical difficulties.
Indeed. All right, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much, Werner, for calling in. We always appreciate your phone calls.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so let me just finish this up quickly, and hopefully we'll have time for a couple more quick calls. In the last stages of the war, a few thousand people ignored their government's advice to leave their town and head out to the countryside, even though everyday living was becoming difficult and food and services were inadequate. Work had almost ground to a halt. Neighboring cities were being violently bombarded, yet many civilians remained in spite of it all because they felt reluctance to abandon their homes or simply because they had nowhere else to go. Women with small children were especially terrified to leave urban areas where there were, at least some air raid shelters, such as the St. Michael's Church, which was built from somewhere around 1010 to 1022 AD, and it was the first one to go. The city center, which had retained its medieval character the city center, which had retained its medieval character until then, with 1,000 half-timbered houses, ceased to exist. The Romanesque St. Mary's Cathedral which dated back to the 9th century, called Nuremberg of the North, because of its medieval character, framework, or architecture, Hildesheim would suffer the same fate as Nuremberg of the South. Hildesheim was spared until almost the end. However, March 22nd, 1945 was a bright, sunny midday when 280 Lancaster bombers destroyed over 1,000 years of history in 17 minutes. It is believed that the strike was called for by the United States, who didn't want any actual battles when they marched in to capture the corpse of a town 16 days later on April 8th. The 12th century Andreas Church had the highest church steeple of Lower Saxony. The impact left bomb craters approximately 5 meters deep and about 20 meters in diameter. 263 acres and 70% of the town was destroyed. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Hildesheim had already lost. Okay, I was just looking at my my Skype was saying my internet connection had a problem. Okay. Hildesheim had already lost 2,831 soldiers during the war, most missing and never accounted for. On top of Hildesheim's loss of 6,934 houses and 20,781 flats, rendering most of the people shelterless, 85% of the shops, 66% of all trading property, 50% of all industrial plants, and 80% of all schools, churches, public houses were also gone in minutes. When the Hildesheim Cathedral suffered near total destruction, a legendary 1,000-year-old rose bush next to it also burned and was buried beneath the rubble until in 1945. Its roots, however, did remain unharmed, and so the bush came back. The historical branch of the RAF gave the following information, 22nd of March 1945. 227 Lancaster bombers, 8 Mosquitoes, and 1 of 8 fighting groups, 4 Lancaster bombers were lost. The target was the railway yards. These were bombed out, but the surrounding built-up areas also suffered severely in what was virtually an area attack. Okay, it was a whole area. This was the only major bombing, or major bomber command raid of the war on Hildesheim, and the post-war British survey found that 263 acres, 70% of the town, had been destroyed. The local report states that the inner town suffered the most damage. The cathedral, most of the churches, many old historic buildings were destroyed. A total of 3,302 blocks of flats containing more than 10,000 apartments were destroyed or seriously damaged. 1,645 people were killed. Hildesheim, like many bomb cities, was poorly rebuilt in concrete after the war. However, in late 1970s, there was some reconstruction there of the historic center, was carried out, and replicas of the original buildings using their original plans, which fortunately had survived, they were able to rebuild the historic inner city of Hildesheim to its original medieval appearance, and it is very, very beautiful. If you ever go to Germany, that's one place I would want you to take a look at. I'm going to hold off there. Yeah.
Someone in the chat room wants to know where this information is.
If you go into my link section on my webpage, go down to related websites and blogs. Okay, there is a number of really good websites in there, but this one here is from a site that has documented all of this stuff. And you can look up so many of the different cities in Germany, and they have a website there. This one page, it's just called Hell, and it will take you to a lot of the different links that they've got all this information covered. It's xulenten.com. Okay, so just look for that on my I can't remember the exact spelling. Look for that on my blog. Okay, now and I'll just add to this. As I say, through Facebook, there's a few friends I've made through there, some other Germans and so on. A number of them shares some stuff with me. We're not going to have time to get into all of that. But one gentleman, a friend named Manfred, 72 years old from Germany, he said, "I spent my childhood in Nuremberg, and I remember the bombings of that city. I've seen horrors at the end of the war I can never forget. It is almost as if it happened yesterday. I'm playing in the rubble," and he showed some pictures to me, and it was just gone. The city was gone. Playing in the rubble, you saw the pictures. This was our playgrounds. To wipe out an entire army is okay, because it's soldier against soldier, but to wipe out defenseless women and children is a war crime. World War II was not really a war. It was genocide of the Germans. And I concur with that.
I do too. I do too. Oh, my goodness. And you know what really ticks me off? Is that now they are blaming Hitler for everything. And yet he tried to prevent war. He tried to make peace from the time that he got into the government. He only attempted to make peace. And absolutely, they wouldn't have it. They were dead set against slaughtering the Germans and destroying Germany.
That's shall exactly we, right.
Shall we take a call?
Oh, we could, absolutely, yes.
All right, let's take Fred in New York. Now. Fred, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Diana, for taking my call. It's very, very sad, I mean, hearing the stories. But, you know, not every single American pilot enjoyed destroying German cities. And I know for a fact, my neighbor, he had since died. He was a B-17 gunner. And he told me that some of the bombing runs that they were ordered to hit railroad stations and civilian targets, they would drop their bombs in the field and come back and say the mission was accomplished or they had engine trouble. And they knew that they were hitting civilian targets. So not every single American exactly followed orders the way that the higher-ups wanted it.
Well, I do know that I have relatives that came back from the war that were absolutely emotionally destroyed because of what happened over there. And war does affect people. Well, you have people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who cannot handle what they were asked to do. It is very destructive. Killing other people, you cannot remain sane and without some emotional problems from killing innocent civilians and children and watching the destruction. How could anybody look at that and know that they contributed to that without feeling some sort of guilt that would well, it would destroy anybody that has a conscience.
You're absolutely right, Diana. And Diana, thank you so much for bringing up these issues and bringing up the fact that war is evil, it is satanic, and the satanic ones that enjoy the killing and the bloodlust are the only ones that ever seem to benefit. And God bless you, Diana, and your guests for bringing this up. It's so sad to hear about these innocent people being destroyed in Germany, but I thank you so much for my call there.
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take Hans from Germany. Hans, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
I'd just like to mention that in the beginning of the war, the English started bombing Germany, and they started bombing a tourist island called Helgoland. And I live 100 kilometers from there. I could hear the bombs. At that time, my whole family, we could hear the bombs falling in Helgoland. And then the stories will be heard about it later. It's just terrible, you know?
Yes.
And I can continue because I spent time in Hamburg when they bombed Hamburg. And I saw how the houses was destroyed, people squeezed to death in the ruins, and even the fighters would come down and shoot down the people when we were trying to save other people in need. It was really, really bad. It took me many years after the war to recuperate because it was just awful, you know?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
And I don't want to make a long story. I can keep on so many things, but this is just what I remember very good in the beginning of the war, what happened. So I will stop for this time, and I like your program very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Hans.
Okay.
Appreciate your call.
Herzlichen vielen Dank, Hans. Herzlichen vielen Dank. Einen schönen guten Abend. Yeah, very nice. Thanks for that.
And I can continue because I spent time in Hamburg when they bombed Hamburg, and I saw how the houses was destroyed, people squeezed to death in the ruins.
Okay, so it sounds like a repeat here.
Yeah, we're getting an echo coming back here somewhere.
Okay. All righty, we are going to a break momentarily. I understand and I know that we do have listeners in Germany, people who listen to this program in Germany, and I've heard from them, and
that's good to know. I'm glad that you're reaching those people. I'm really glad to hear that.
All righty, we're going to a break. Be right back. Welcome back. Our guest today has been Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He is the editor, translator, and producer of the film Hitler's War, What the Historians Neglect to Mention. And do you find, Wayne, that there are more and more people who are understanding accurate history?
Yes, to a certain extent. I know in, you know, some of the circles of, you know, people that I'm involved with, they're starting to get it. It's hard to get this through to people, and sometimes you just have to go very piecemeal, little things here and there, but they're starting to get it. Other people, though, even though they're kind of on your side, they still believe some things that are false about Hitler and about National Socialism, and you know, I have to kind of gently correct them, say, no, that wasn't right either, you know. It's tough. It's a lot of landmines out there when we get into these topics. But you know, I know we're rapidly running out of time, Dion. I just, you know, I just want to thank you, you know, for the last couple of years of radio that you've done here on Republic Broadcasting Network, and that they have allowed you to stay on here. You have done so much, and you and your guests, and too many to mention, to have also inspired me to do what I'm doing now, and to keep bringing up these issues. And there's no shortage of stuff that we could talk about. It's just such a vast area. But you have done so much, you know, for my people. Yeah, really, you have by sharing this information constantly, and I just hope that you can keep doing it and keep bringing on these wonderful guests.
Thank you.
Covering these issues, because people have to realize it's not just about the past. This is going on today in
it
other
is.
Parts of the world against other countries, and the same MO, the same game plan, as Rodney says. You know, it's being conducted everywhere. So we need to learn from this.
I'm sorry. We have one last caller. Let's sneak him in real quick. Rick in Milwaukee. Rick?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just make a brief comment. I appreciate your efforts, and I'm encouraged that the Antichrist money changers can't hold out the truth. It's screaming through the cracks.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Rick.
Okay.
I believe that's true. I think that truth is winning. I really believe that.
Right.
And
yeah, and
it's important.
As I read earlier from, you know, the comments of Adolf Hitler before he died, you know, he thought it might take a couple hundred years for this truth to be uncovered. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's only taken one generation, and I'm going to do what I can, and keep doing what I can do to keep telling this truth and bringing these facts people's attention. And I really thank you, Deanna, for having me on again today and giving me the opportunity to do that, to speak on behalf of my people.
Well, I feel it an honor to hear about the truth, and I'm pleased to do it. Thank you so much, Wayne. Appreciate you. All righty. Bye-bye. Talk with you tomorrow.